Well, my good friend and neighbor, this is Phil Nee. As we put the wraps on our morning session, we'll be back your way a little bit later on today with some community conversation on The Morning Show. News this hour from ABC is next. It is sponsored by Pamela's Fine Jewelry, a full-service jewelry store featuring a wide variety of styles in spring green, and the Phoenix Center, family fun at its best. There's always something for everyone, including bowling, legendary pizza, and video games. It is 66 degrees in Richland Center at 9 o'clock.
This is a special report from ABC News. Biden drops out. I'm Sherry Preston. The presidential campaign upended by President Biden's weekend decision to end his reelection campaign. ABC's Rachel Scott with reaction from Donald Trump.
This is now a major campaign reset, to say the least, with just over 100 days to go until the November election. It's a curveball the Trump campaign was preparing for, but this is not one that they wanted. And Trump's playbook so far has been to attack, attack, attack. The former president, who just days ago said he wanted to focus on this message of unity, now calling President Biden the worst president in American history, insisting whoever the left puts up will be more of the same.
As for Harris's running mate, here's former New Jersey governor and ABC News consultant Chris Christie.
Josh Shapiro would be the first person on my list. If he has approval ratings in the high 60s in Pennsylvania, if he could deliver Pennsylvania, that allows them to play in Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, in places that they need to try to keep from Biden's coalition 4 years ago.
Philadelphia police looking for suspects after a deadly mass shooting at what looked like a big weekend block party.
We're not exactly sure who is the organizer of this event, but that is going to be part of our investigation.
Philadelphia Police Inspector D.F. Pace, 3 people were killed and 6 more hurt. Under investigation, an incident with a passenger jet getting way too over the water very close before landing.
The flight en route from Columbus, Ohio to Tampa, when on approach, it suddenly dipped to dangerously low altitude. An air traffic controller quickly alerting the pilot. The aircraft surged back into the sky, diverting to Fort Lauderdale. Experts say the plane should have been closer to 1,200 feet up before landing.
But ABC's Yaral Reshev says when the pilots were alerted, they were only at 150 feet up. At the movies, Twister's making history, earning more than $80 million in its first weekend, best ever for a disaster movie. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
Good morning. This is Pamela at Pamela's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Spring Green. Happy anniversary to my parents, Jim and Marie Nieder, celebrating 67 years of marital bliss. If you have an anniversary, we have several styles of anniversary rings in all different metals. So stop in, pick out that beautiful anniversary ring for your next celebration at Pamela's in beautiful downtown Spring Green.
Work hard. Making the right choice for lunch isn't hard. The Phoenix Center opens at 10 o'clock Monday through Saturday and Sunday at 4 p.m. with all your lunchtime favorites. Burgers, salads, terrific appetizers, specialty sandwiches, wraps, and more. Easy in, easy out. The Phoenix Center is the perfect way to break up the day. Can't get away for lunch? Let the team at the Phoenix Center serve you a great meal tonight, including the world-famous Phoenix Center pizza. Or call ahead, 649-7469, for carryouts from the Phoenix Center in Richland Center.
A high of 82 today with isolated showers and thunderstorms. Partly to mostly cloudy tonight. Scattered showers again late and a low of 63. 82 and showers and thunderstorms likely on Tuesday. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy, scattered showers and a few thunderstorms remaining in the region with a low of 60. Wednesday, partly cloudy, lower humidity, especially later in the day, and a high of 77. Rockwell Automation at Richland Center would like you to know that if you are a part of a nonprofit organization or 501(c) and have opportunities for Rockwell employees to partake in, please let them know. The team is looking for volunteering and donation opportunities within the surrounding communities. If you would like to partner with them or have any questions, please call 608-647-9400. They look forward to extending their community involvement. Rockwell Automation, ingrained in the community, dedicated to making a difference.
Choosing to bundle your auto and homeowners coverage isn't just convenient, it can save you money. Hi, this is Julie at State Farm. On top of the monthly savings when bundling auto and homeowners, our agency can help you select affordable coverages and price options just for you. It's what we call the personal price plan. How do I start bundling? Well, whether you call, email, or drop by the office, talking to the Julie Karen State Farm team is the first step to discovering how much time, effort, and money you could save by bundling your auto and homeowners coverage. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Attention farmers and folks in need of quality supplies. Engine Creek Farm Store has got you covered. Located at 11678 Yuba Drive, Hillsboro, Wisconsin, Engine Creek Farm Store is your local oasis for all things farm and machinery supplies. From essential tools to supplies that keep your farm running smoothly, they've got it all. And guess what? Engine Creek Farm Store goes beyond the farm. You can also pick up some rugged clothes and boots for those hardworking days. Give them a call at 608-528-4001.
Hi, this is Teresa Clary with Clary Memorial Funeral Home. With today's rising inflation, now is the perfect time to pre-plan and pre-fund your funeral with coverage from Pekin Insurance through Clary Memorial Funeral Home. Your pre-funded policy, called Pathway, is guaranteed and can be used anywhere in the United States. Call today and protect against future inflation with a Pathway policy from Pekin Insurance. Contact Josh Clary at Clary Memorial Funeral Home for more information.
Hello everyone, Brian from Walsh's. Did you know that our Richland Center and Muscadet stores carry culverts? We have single or double wall plastic culverts, and we have galvanized ones also. We also have drain tile in 3, 4, or 6 inch diameter. And for the farmers, we have fencing supplies, water tanks, bale feeders, bunk and mineral feeders, and many more things. Stop in at our Richland Center or Muscadet stores to see these and many great products. And as always, we do appreciate your business.
Welcome to our morning show on WRCO here. In the first part, we're going to talk about the upcoming Plane, Fire, and EMS 3-day celebration. In the studio with us today, Dan Herfel and John Rulin to talk about all the great things going on in the village of Plane. So, Danny, let's look at this weekend. The forecast, first of all, sounds pretty good for you guys.
Yes, it does. Just a little bit of rain to get through tomorrow, hopefully, and that's it.
That's how you ordered it, right?
I talked to Mother Nature, and we had a heart-to-heart.
Well, it was really good for Kaz and for Boaz this week, so Plane is due then.
Yes.
Yeah, so tell me, it looks like you've got a full weekend of things going on here.
Yeah, everything kicks off on Friday afternoon, the baseball tournament. It's going to be a 12-and-under tournament this year. There's 8 teams going to play in that, and kicks off Friday night, and that'll go all day Saturday and then into Sunday. And then, of course, we have all the live music. Friday night will be the high mileage band, and then Sean Shell on Saturday afternoon, he'll bring some of his music, and then the big band Cherry Pie on Saturday night, and then Donnie Ray's X going to play after the parade on Sunday.
Well, that's some really good music there, isn't it?
Yeah, they all draw a good crowd, and they all have really good tunes.
They do. I was thinking about Cherry Pie. Now, they've been at your festival before. They must be back by popular demand, aren't
yes,
they?
This is actually their third year back, and they beg to keep coming back. Uh-huh. So,
kind of an 80s, 90s kind of feel there. And
yeah, just good music.
Uh-huh. So get everybody out on the dance floor, even John, maybe?
Yeah.
Always that possibility.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So then high mileage draw as well on Friday night, and Donnie Razek, too. So you've got some great local and regional favorites, don't
you? Yes, very much.
And youth baseball, that always draws moms and dads and grandmas and grandpas and aunts and uncles, and doesn't it?
That age group is really fun to watch, and they're really doing good this year, and they're just fun.
Do you have teams from quite a ways away coming in?
Yeah, we have. Right now, it's the Southwest Coyotes, and then Wisconsin Heights, Lancaster, Dodgeville, Barneveld, and then there's two teams coming from La Crosse.
All right. Should be some really good action then.
Oh, yeah. It'll keep the field busy all weekend.
Yeah, and your ballpark stays busy almost every day, doesn't it, in
yes.
the summertime? Sure.
Yeah, John puts in a lot of work keeping it going.
Yes, he does. John, good morning. This is a big undertaking for the Village of Plain, isn't it?
Yeah, like Danny said, the talk with Mother Nature hopefully works out. And I remember last year with our three-day, the Friday night, you know, we had a bad storm move in, but that was kind of a front coming through, and then it turned out to be a beautiful weekend. And it's been a struggle like it has been everywhere else this year with as much rain as we've gotten and trying to keep our park cleaned up and the town cleaned up. It's been tough, but it's getting better now. And like you said, the weather looks good for this weekend, and we'll get in there. The guys are starting to prep today. There's some punch list stuff I put together, and so it should be good by the time the Friday rolls around, and hopefully have a good weekend.
I was at your park a few times for baseball this summer, and one of the times, not the time it rained, but I was there another time, and it was a little squishy as you walked across things there at the park. Has that dried up a little bit?
Yeah, it's getting better. Of course, last night's rain didn't really help out the situation, but it's getting firmer. It's been tough, but you know, the park's in a marsh, and you know, we try putting drain tile in here and there, trying to fix those problems, but sometimes you just got to give in to it being a wet year. So last year we didn't have to worry about that. No ball games were canceled. You know, everything went according to plan. This year was a big struggle. You know, you didn't have enough field dry to try to get the fields equipped to play on, but we got through it. So, I mean, there was only a few makeup games. So things have gotten better. So
can you tell us about Fire and EMS in Plain? And I would imagine just about every member is going to be doing something this weekend for the festival, aren't they?
Yeah, so doing the fire chief thing, you know, the 3 days been going on for a lot of years. I've been on the department 31 years, and it's been going on since then. And prior to that, you know, I believe it was like in the late 80s, early 90s, the American Legion was a part of it. They helped out, and they used to have it behind the fire station. Through the years, the park got built up better. It changed around. And then, you know, we decided, the Fire and EMS decided to go on their own. And it's been going ever since. We've had great people running it through the years. And as far as the Fire and EMS side, you know, we had our 100 year in 2016. That was cool. Had a good turnout. Being a volunteer fire department, along with volunteer EMS, you know, to get the help, especially for 3 days, you know, it's pretty cool for a small, you know, small department. You know, we have about 32, 34 guys on fire side, and I think 20 some on the EMS side. So we're fortunate on that part. And for the most part, everybody puts their time in and works their shifts, and some stick around and help out where needed, and it makes hopefully Danny's life easier. So, so it's been good, and hopefully we can keep doing it for years to come.
Do you look at this as a fundraiser, John?
So a little history on that. So we about lost the 3 day in the late 90s because we had a couple guys that did it for years, and one guy passed away, unfortunately, and the other guy was just getting wore out from it, and it dropped down to a 2 day event. And that's when we kind of, myself and a friend of mine got kind of forced into, you know, doing it because we didn't want to see it go because of the history and the tradition. So we took over and I did it. I ended up, I think, running for 20 some years and, you know, didn't think anything of it. And when we decided to take over, it was to do it. It wasn't really a fundraiser. It was to give back to the community, show appreciation to the community, you know, doing all of this work just to say, hey, come say hi, you know, come hang out with us. So it's been going well since then. And when I stepped aside, you know, a few years ago, I was happy with the ones that took it over. So the community really doesn't have much that goes on throughout the year. And this is like a big, you know, that's why it's our celebration, you know, to celebrate Plain and, you know, in our local districts or townships and whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a cheap endeavor to hire these bands and everything that goes into it, Dan.
No, it's not. And, at the end of the thing, yeah, we do raise a little bit of money, and that all goes back to the fire and EMS departments. But yeah, it takes a lot, and it's a lot to put together. But at the end of it, when the park's full of people and everybody's just talking, it's a great feeling.
No doubt. Tell me about the parade then on Sunday.
So the parade will be at 11 o'clock on Sunday. If you have anything you want to put into it, show up at the church and get registered. And the longer the parade, the better. It seems to always draw a really good showing, and I appreciate everyone that comes and puts something through it.
Yeah, you really have, and I've been able to witness it a few times, you really have a good array of just a little bit of everything, don't you?
Yeah, there's, everything from the bands to whatever, all the big trucks that come through, everything. It's just fun to see.
Do you have the alumni band? Are they in it again this year, or River Valley Band?
I don't know.
You don't know specifically as far as entries, but they have been in the past.
Yes.
And, sure. And a couple of times you had UW Band coming through there as well. So.
Yeah, they're not coming this year, but.
Big tradition, though. Right? Absolutely. Lots of antique tractors and all kinds of fun stuff.
Yeah, who doesn't like tractors, old cars, and fire trucks?
Right, exactly.
Big trucks.
We'll have a little bit of that, too. So there's no pre-registration for the parade, then, in other words, Dan?
No, you can pre-register if you want, but just show up that morning. Try to get there by 10 or so. It could be a little bit hairy with road construction, trying to get into town, but as far as the parade route, it'll be unaffected. So anyone coming to watch the parade route's going to be in the same spot.
Let's talk about that construction a little bit, John. Highway 23 remains closed this weekend then?
Yeah, so to represent the village side of things, Highway 23 is closed for the reconstruction, the road reconstruction, bridge reconstruction, and then in the village itself, they're replacing a lot of crosswalks, kind of the same as what they're doing in Spring Green currently, and we're putting in some new storm sewer across the road also, and unfortunately with the weather, things got just thrown off, and now they decided to come to town this last week, so the town kind of looks like a war zone now, but weather permitting, they're hoping to get a lot of curb and gutter, the storm sewer stuff in this week. By the time Friday rolls around, they want to pull all the barricades and everything back tight because they're well aware of our parking situation, and they're trying to help us out with everything. They're well aware of what's going on, and we'll just see how things play out. But yeah, so and we'll put probably something on Facebook, but we kind of told everybody, if you're coming from Spring Green to take Big Hollow Road off 14 to County G to County B, and that'll bring you right in. So it's not a big inconvenience. You can't really drive 23. You can, but it's 45 mile an hour speed limit currently. And if you try to go during the week, there's a lot of flagging operations going on.
Basically, you can go B on either side of plane, though, coming in.
You can get the plane. There's no problem. You can get here. And if you're coming from the north, you can go up double G to G and back down to N. So it's not, I've done it a few times. It's not that many miles out of the way, not that many minutes out of the way. Plus, you're being safer then.
The reconstruction on Highway 23 and then your curb and gutter, did it just so happen that it was the same year? Or did you just kind of plan it knowing that you were going to have 23 closed for the most part this year?
So that curb and gutter and everything is all incorporated in this DOT project.
Oh.
It's part of it. We decided to piggyback our storm sewer work on with them because they would have the roads closed anyways. But we did three blocks in our village by our fire station. That's all brand new now. So fortunately, with the early spring, we were able to get those streets taken care of. We knew about the reconstruction of Highway 23 probably 4 years ago, 5 years ago. But everything kept getting pushed off. Well, we kept pushing our street work off, and then we finally just said, "Well, we got to get our street work done." We do a plan every so many years. We do a street. Well, it just so happened that Highway 23 fell in place with our street work that we did in town, and we're like, "It is what it is." So at least next year will be very nice. Mm-hmm. It'll be very nice and clean around town. So just it's inconvenience to make it. There's always an inconvenience before it gets better. So
I think everyone understands, though.
Yeah, the business owners are good. They've mm-hmm. been really good about it, and we appreciate that.
Talk about the area that Plain Fire and EMS serves. So is it a pretty wide area?
Yeah, so we serve 166 square miles. We service town of Franklin, town of Troy, town of Honey Creek, town of Bear Creek, plus the village of Plain. Some of those we take a certain percentage of service area. So yes, we travel some pretty good distances, and the EMS, they go a little bit farther because they with Hill Point being first responders and Loganville being first responders, Plain heads, our ambulance will go out farther into the Hill Point area. So yes.
And transport to primarily Sauk Prairie then?
Our ambulance will end up Richland Center, Reedsburg, Sauk, mm-hmm. or the trips. They'll end up to Dodgeville here and there, but sometimes to Madison. And unfortunately, the EMS have been a little busy this year, but they got a good staff, so they're doing well.
A few years ago at the parade, you got called out during the parade too, didn't you?
Yeah, there was a call for a house fire at our 100 year from our friend that lived in Plain, doesn't live here anymore in Plain. I don't know why he did it, but yeah, so we had a little bit of excitement. So people got to see us respond out of town.
Yeah, I thought it was like, oh, this is a nice show here. These guys are doing this for a show, but it really was a call.
So. Yeah, not at all.
It does happen.
Yes, exactly. We've had calls. We've had accidents before at our celebration, and it's nice because our significant others have stepped in to take over if we do get called out. So it's very nice. Last year, I think we had a call during our chicken barbecue and during the parade, and we, you know, Spring Green took the call for us because it was towards their direction, and it would have just been a nightmare trying to get out of town then. So we try to, you know, plan just in case something would happen and
work together.
First time, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. I mean, we do mutual aid, all of us, so it's nice.
That's wonderful. Everyone loves a chicken barbecue, Danny.
Yeah, chicken barbecue is on Sunday after the parade. Definitely come down the park and have a big chunk of chicken. And, it's same meal again this year as last year. It'd be the half a chicken and baked potato, baked beans, cookie, bread. And, and if you choose that you want to just get it and go home, we're going to do the drive-through again down on Bridge Road. So go down there and jump in line after the parade if you choose.
Okay, so drive-through, or you can eat in person as well.
Yep,
there.
Yep.
So.
And then after that, of course, Donnie Razak will pick up. And then we have Kinchy's pedal pull. That'll be at 1 o'clock. And then some fire truck rides from 3 to 4
Ooh.
On Sunday.
Boy, it sounds like a lot of stuff there. I know you have the big shelter there, too, where the music and everything is going to take place under there. So.
Yep, yeah, we have the big shelter, and then we'll have two more tents put up this year. Just mainly helps with the ball teams and having shade for them and stuff. So, yeah, plenty of seating areas and just good place to sit and listen to music.
So what's your favorite part of the weekend, Danny?
I don't really have a favorite, but it is on Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening when the park is just packed full. That's what excites me. Mm-hmm. I just enjoy seeing everyone having a good time.
Yeah. What's the population of Plain?
It's about 780.
So it
give or take. So
probably doubles, triples, quadruples on the weekend, I would say.
At least doubles.
Yeah, exactly.
There'll be a lot of folks there enjoying it. I know, as they always do. A lot of people, I'm guessing, come back that live outside the area for this weekend, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like class reunions, family reunions of people, you know, they always came to Plain. So that's what I mean. There's a lot of tradition to having our celebration. So I mean, it is nice, you know, to make some money. You know, we try to buy our own equipment as much as we can, us and the EMS. So, when I first started doing it, all I cared is if we made $100. You know, just we wanted to give back to the community, and Danny does a lot of legwork to get donations. You know, we have local businesses, and I'm sure he'll probably name them off or if he wants to, but, mm-hmm. You know, we have a lot of support in the village of Plain, and it's very nice and the surrounding areas, but our village they really appreciate what we do, and we appreciate that. So it's very nice.
Do you have something, John, kind of on the horizon you've got your eye on, like a new piece of equipment or something like that, that you'd like to have?
So we do have a new engine coming next spring, and We've put some money into some of the upfits of that truck. You know, we have a UTV fairly new that we paid for out of our celebration, or out of our, I guess all of our extra donations and, you know, the monies we made off of our celebration. And we do a breakfast in the fall too. So, but yeah, I mean, to get this new truck upfitted will be, or outfitted, I guess, would be kind of the big goal coming up here. The fire district helped us out for the majority of it, but we try to show that we can, you know, lean on us a little bit too with some things. So that's what's on the horizon.
Danny, you have some sponsors you'd like to thank?
Yeah, well, Kramer Brothers, Royal Bank, Milestone Materials, Strachan Meats, Kramer North America, People's Community Bank, Plain Quick Stop, Whitman Farms LLC, and Kyle Hemmersbach Trucking Inc. They all step up and they write us a very generous check, which mainly it helps offset a lot of the initial cost of this. And then it makes the weekend start out that we can see daylight as far as making a profit. And all the businesses in town step up and do something anyhow, but it's just, these are the ones that kind of go above and beyond.
So when you go out and you're soliciting, you need some sponsorship, it sounds like you've had good response.
Yeah, everyone's willing to pitch in, and it, you know, it's not like I have to stand there and twist their arm very long. They just, okay, this is what it's for, so yeah, it goes well.
And as you mentioned, initially you have some bills to pay. You know, it's one thing after the weekend, the proceeds, but you've got to pay a few things beforehand too, don't you?
Yeah, there's some of these checks go out almost a year ahead of time to get stuff booked in, and you have to pay some money up front, and it's just nice having this other money come in soon.
Sure. I know it's a busy weekend. You'll probably sleep well next Sunday night, right?
Hopefully.
Hopefully. John, anything else you'd like to add today?
No, hopefully we can see you in Plain. You can get there. That's all I'll let you know. I'll tell you that.
You can get there from here.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's worth finding. You betcha. Anything else, Danny, you'd like to add?
No, just come enjoy it. It's going to be beautiful weather. And just enjoy the weekend. Have a burger.
Okay.
Nothing wrong with three-day burger.
Yeah, I've heard rave reviews.
Yes, exactly.
And the chicken, too. Yes. Yeah, good stuff on Sunday. All right. Well, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedules. You both had your work trucks in here today, so I know you got to get back to work. But thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. John Rulin joining us, and Danny Herfel as well, representing Plain, Fire, and EMS. The three-day celebration is this coming weekend.
Family Prescription Center. Your family always comes first.
The Richland Family Prescription Center's primary function is to fill your prescription accurately and to provide added value services to enhance your health. Filling your prescription is only the first step. Understanding your medication and the importance of compliance will greatly benefit your medication outcome. Whether it's a first-time visit or they've seen you before, the Prescription Center's friendly and knowledgeable staff is dedicated to providing you with a quality pharmacy experience, and they have built their reputation by going the extra mile to ensure your satisfaction. The Richland Family Prescription Center, your one-stop source for all of your prescription and healthcare needs. Your complete customer satisfaction is their top priority.
Family Prescription Center, we're your family.
This summer's hottest lineup is not at a music festival, it's at Dunkin', because Dunkin' is serving up some iconic ice-cold drinks that'll turn your summer fun up to 10,000 degrees. Headlining this lineup is the Dunkin' Iced Coffee. The refreshing trio of Dunkin' Refreshers flavors are also featured, including new Kiwi Watermelon, and the new Sparked Energy Drink is debuting in a fizzy spectacle of vitamins, minerals, and caffeine. Dunkin' has the cold bevy lineup that'll keep America running all summer long. Drop by or order one ahead on the Dunkin' app. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply. Richland Center runs on Dunkin'.
Thanks to Danny and John for being on the first part of our morning show today from WRCO Radio. In the second part, we'll feature an interview recorded earlier with WRCO News Director Joanne Krulatz. We had a chance to talk to Katrina Shanklin, who was in our WRCO studios over the weekend, a visit to Richland Center. Just about a month or so ago, we featured the comments of Rebecca Cook, Eric Wilson, and Katrina as they were in the studio at different times this year. All three running for 3rd Congressional District. The primary is coming up on August 13th. So we'll feature that interview with Joanne and Katrina coming up on the morning show.
I'm Naheem Hines, professional football player and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care, and they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan, and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
Here today with Katrina Shanklin, who is currently a representative on the State Assembly, but she is this time running for the 3rd congressional seat in the state. And so you are up against two other candidates in the Democratic Party, and then all three of you are vying to go and head-to-head with Derek Van Orden. How is your campaign going? You've been in Richland Center quite often lately.
Thanks. I've been really enjoying coming back here. It's a beautiful area, and it's wonderful to see people I met previously and then also meet new ones. We were just at Kelly's and had a great coffee. I have been really enjoying getting all across the 3rd Congressional District. It's a huge district, 19 counties that covers western and central Wisconsin. And so I have been all over every single week trying to get to not only new places I haven't been yet, but come back repeatedly to other larger areas like Richland Center. And by larger, this is such a rural district that Richland Center is one of the larger cities. And I think that really speaks to the need to have somebody who understands rural communities. I grew up in a small town of 1,000, and I represent a pretty rural district in central Wisconsin. And now I'm running for Congress because I want to ensure that we have a strong voice in Congress who is really focused on delivering common sense solutions and results for western and central Wisconsin.
So around here, you know, a lot of our issues are school funding. We've had schools go to referendum. One school district recently passed a referendum. Another school failed. We've got another school that's going to referendum in August. We have another school that failed in this last fall, and they're going to go to referendum again in April. And it's like referendum after referendum after referendum. How do you see an improvement for education so that schools aren't always having to go to referendum?
Thank you so much for this great question. I am actually about to release a new TV ad specifically on public education. And in it, I talk about two things. Funding our public education so we don't have to over-rely on property taxes, which is what those referenda are for, to raise the levy, which increases property taxes, as well as supporting teachers with raising teacher pay. And here's how we can do it. So here in Wisconsin, we have shared revenue on the state level that goes to local communities. A lot of local communities are actually going to referendum on police, fire, and EMS, and shared revenue was going to help that, and it did to an extent, but I think we need even more shared revenue on that level so that we can hold the line on property taxes. But as it relates to school districts and holding the line on property taxes, we need more state and federal support. And so one of my ideas that I have is a new program on the federal level to reward states that invest in their public schools and invest less in those private voucher schools that are really taking directly from the pot of taxpayer money in our local public school district. And then another program to raise teacher pay. So providing that support directly from the federal government and sending it to states that will then deliver it to their local school districts. So that way we're not, as property taxpayers, homeowners and renters alike, being given the bill every year, 2 years, 3 years. There's lots of rural school districts especially that are really struggling and looking at consolidation. And that's a concern for me as somebody who did grow up in a very geographically huge small school district, Wittenberg-Burnhamwood, where, you know, a lot of kids had to ride the bus for at least a half hour. And that was years and years ago. Now I'm hearing, especially as I travel across the third, there's a lot of people who are looking at an hour or more as sparsely populated areas are looking at, you know, shutting down some of their schools and consolidating with others. So we can do more for public education. It's the cornerstone of every community. And I believe that we need an all of government approach, working with local, state and federal leaders. So in Congress, that's what I'll do to raise teacher pay and invest in our public schools so we don't have to raise our property taxes.
Do you see some of that trickling down then into childcare facilities? Richland County actually is a childcare desert. And, you know, and if you don't have childcare, then you can't go to work, which deteriorates then your job markets. And those kids are eventually going to be going into school, too, you know. So it's kind of a all-in-one thing, you know, one umbrella that how do we take care of our kids of today?
I could not agree with you more. And when I talk about education, I not only bring up K-12 public schools and pre-K and child care, but also higher education, technical colleges and universities, because it is making sure that they have the best possible future. And our child care providers are skilled in early childhood education, and they're really preparing our kids with those soft skills, understanding how to regulate their feelings and describe them instead of not using their words, right? And emotional management, in addition to all the other kind of hard skills like saying please and thank you and washing your hands and tying your shoes, right? And I think that's really important because when it comes to child care and child care deserts in Wisconsin, we have a lot of work to do. There was a program on the state level called Child Care Counts, and that is going to expire in about a year's time. And, you know, 40% of child care providers would have had to either raise tuition, raise costs on working families, or close their doors altogether without that program. So we need our state lawmakers to listen to the calls from child care providers to reauthorize that program. But I also know there are federal child tax credits that are important to making child care more affordable, but we can do even more to make child care as accessible as possible by supporting our child care providers. As you said, if you don't even have child care in your community, to the extent that it becomes a desert, you're actually opting, in some cases, opting out of the workforce or maybe not working the same number of hours you want, or even maybe not taking a promotion you're eligible for because you don't have that child care. So this is an economic issue and a workforce issue too.
Well, another economic issue, and you brought it up, is higher education. Richland was the first campus to close in the UW system. And it's not even UW system schools that are continuing to close. There's private colleges. And that affects the community that that college is in. And their revenue decreases. Richland County's revenue has dropped tremendously since the campus has closed. How do you see being able to help those communities that are suffering in that way?
Absolutely. I think first and foremost, it's important to recognize that there was never a vote of the state legislature or governor to close these campuses down. And that's a problem. I was very concerned when the 2 and 4 year campuses were merged years ago and said this is going to lead to the closures. And I've been speaking out as a state lawmaker who serves on the Colleges and Universities Committee about the way that these smaller campuses, especially 2 year campuses, fulfill so many needs of area high school students who are looking at higher education but aren't quite sure which 4 year they'd like to go to. And those 2 year campuses are a great access point that are incredibly affordable and have amazing educators. I personally went to a two-year campus, UW-Marathon County in Wausau, before heading on to a four-year campus. And I think that my experience was instrumental in helping me and shaping my skill set and my education. And I am lamenting for Richland Center area folks who no longer have that option, and also am very frustrated that the economic impact, the hit to the community, isn't just a one-time thing like some state lawmakers might have implied. It's forever. It's generational, potentially. It's the same as a manufacturing facility shutting down and leaving the state or country. It has a massive impact on your future workforce, your community members. Some have moved away altogether, I've heard. And that really concerns me, because communities like Richland Center are special places where they deserve investment too. We were at a forum in Muscadet as a lawmaker. I attended and spoke at a forum on the future of higher education. And former Senator Dale Schultz said there, I'll never forget his words, "Rural people deserve nice things too." I've said it so many times since. He's 100% right. Your zip code, living in a rural area, shouldn't prevent you from having the same things that everyone else has: access to childcare, clean water, broadband, a good job that pays well, healthcare. And when it comes to higher education, a technical college or local 2 or 4 year campus as well. And so for this area and all of Western Wisconsin, I want to be a champion on this issue. And I think on the federal level, we need to look at access points, not only for higher education, but I had a listening center in Richland Center a couple months ago, and we talked about healthcare access points too. That's another one where, you know, providers' doors are closing, and the federal government has a lot to do with that related to reimbursement rates, as well as the state government and Medicaid. So I want to work on those issues because, as Dale Schultz says, rural people deserve nice things too, and we have to make it happen.
And I think it's important too that, you know, with, like you brought up, Medicaid and Medicare, and I'm on Medicare. I went to the doctor and I got my bill and it said I owed $240. My Medicare had always been, my portion was $200. And when I went, and they said, no, it went up to $240. I don't remember getting any letter about it going up. You know, there needs to be more, it needs to be more transparent.
Thank you for sharing that. And I agree completely. One of the conversations I had recently on the trail, somebody brought up surprise medical bills and hidden healthcare costs. And there was a provision in the Affordable Care Act that was supposed to have hospitals actually listing all the different costs so people have transparency. I think we need a little bit stronger laws related to that, because it's still not working out in terms of transparency as it was intended to. But in addition to that, we need accountability and transparency in all medical billing and in pricing. And I think that means, you know, when it comes to health insurance companies and the middleman, in addition to providers, we need to ensure that our federal programs like Medicaid and Medicare are not only holding the line on those rising costs, but that we're fairly funding the providers too, so their doors stay open. So I appreciate you sharing that.
What really gets me too is, as you get older, it's harder, because you got to watch all these hoops. You're more of your own advocate when you're younger and you have a job. For the most part, you're covered under your employer. And now, as you're getting older and more forgetful, let's face it, you know, not everybody, but I'll put myself in that place of, and you got to be your own advocate. And you don't understand all these things. There's got to be a way to make it easier so that as you age, you're not worried about, did you make the right decision? And then find out later that you don't have the right insurance for what you need.
That's such a great point. And insurance is already very difficult to navigate. We shouldn't be making it any harder. And, you know, when it comes to surprise medical bills or just helping people navigate from a consumer protection point, their bills, I've handled a lot of those, what we call constituent cases on the state level. A lot of people aren't aware that you can call your state lawmaker's office and say, hey, I have a problem with this medical bill. Can you help me either contact this healthcare provider directly? directly or in some cases file a complaint with the Office of Commissioner of Insurance if it's related to insurance. And we've helped a lot of different constituents with that because it has been so difficult. And, you know, no one's going to have all the answers to making it easier, but we need a task force to help with not only consumer protection, but transparency as it relates to healthcare costs. And one of the things I talk about a lot on the campaign trail is the rising costs of healthcare and prescription medicine and how we need to tackle those issues. And I'm really proud that in the legislature, we've been able to get some things done on that, specifically cracking down on pharmacy benefit managers, the middleman between insurance companies and pharmacies. There used to be what's called a gag clause, so that if you were going to the pharmacy with your prescription and picking up a drug and it wasn't generic, and there wasn't a more affordable price, a pharmacist could actually not tell you. They were gagged from saying, hey, there's actually a similar equivalent for you that would be $50 or $500 less. And now they can. And so we need to eliminate some of that, all of that red tape, and just help consumers not only with lower costs, but having that transparency and accountability.
You know, as we've talked about school, which is the younger generation. We've talked about Medicare, which is the older generation. And we've talked about higher education, the middle generation. That is one thing about politics. You have to cover all generations and all genres, don't you?
Absolutely. And I think what I enjoy most about politics is the opportunity to meet people where they're at and hear from them. Today at Kelly's, I heard from a number of parents who wanted to talk about their kids or their loved ones and really talk about issues really important to them, whether it was healthcare or quality. And I found that really moving. I remember people's stories. And when I see a bill that I want to put my name on because of a constituent that I met, it really shows that you have a lot of power when you share your stories with elected officials. And on the campaign trail, you have a lot of power when you see candidates come to town and speak, and you can ask lots of questions. We had a great conversation today about ending Citizens United, getting big corporate money out of politics so voters have the power. And what I'm telling everyone in the 3rd Congressional District is their voice matters. We're in the number one swing district and the number one swing state, and we have so much power to not only decide, you know, what the makeup of the House looks like, but also it's, you know, a lot of the votes for both the White House and Senate are going to come for Wisconsin, I should say, are going to come through the 3rd. It's a perfect swing district in many respects. And I think that the civic participation I've seen not only here, but all over Western and Central Wisconsin is really inspiring to me.
Well, I think people are realizing that even though all they get is one vote, that one vote is very important, and they have a voice.
Absolutely. Well said. People understand that when they vote, they can shape their future. You know, the policies, whether it's the local level, what garbage removal and snow removal and infrastructure, or whether it's state level, like public education and water quality, or whether it's federal level, like Social Security and Medicare and the Farm Bill, your vote really determines what's going to happen. And people want elected officials who show up and listen and lead on the issues that matter to them. And that's why I'm here. My number one goal in this campaign is to listen to voters and really respond to their needs and interests and hopefully get elected to become their champion in Congress.
Well, some of the other topics, and you've brought them up, is infrastructure. And coming in, you rode down, drove down Highway 14, which is a U.S. highway, and it's in terrible shape. I mean, you probably realized, you probably felt like you were on a railroad track.
You know, I appreciate you mentioning that. Yeah, infrastructure is important, and road funding is definitely an issue. In my time in the legislature, we've had a lot of disagreement about how to fund our roads. Voters are, I would say, divided isn't the word, but they have many different ideas about how to sustainably and fairly fund roads, right? And I think because of that, because of the differences of an opinion, it took a while to find a good kind of thoughtful way forward on getting our roads fixed. But I give Governor Evers a lot of credit. He's gotten a lot done on that over the last few years. But, you know, with tough winters and sometimes there's overuse of certain roads. I think that we can be creative on, you know, how to not only fix our roads, but also do it in a way that benefits rural communities. So one bill that I want to mention that I co-sponsored that I'm really proud of that we got done this session is the Agricultural Road Improvement Program. Several hundred million dollars is being distributed across the state to communities that apply, specifically if a road in their community is a primarily agricultural road, meaning, you know, this is the best place to get your goods to market, or it will save the farmer on a certain number of trips or lower the weight of things. And so I think that that's incredible. It's the first time we sent money specifically to agricultural roads. And I think that's a great idea to bring to Congress as well.
How do you see the dollars coming for funding? More funding for infrastructure.
More funding for infrastructure. So there are two bills that Congress passed last session, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law and then the Inflation Reduction Act, that I think are both really important for infrastructure. Bipartisan Infrastructure Law brought a lot of money in for water, including sewer infrastructure, for example, utility, water utility infrastructure, and clean drinking water. So there are places in the third with PFAS contamination that are getting some of that money now because of that. And I think that's really helpful because I believe everyone deserves to drink water from their taps. The Inflation Reduction Act brought even more money in for infrastructure, including EV car charging infrastructure. Our state just got $78 million after we passed a bipartisan bill to leverage that federal funding. And that will help some folks, but we also have to focus on, you know, road funding and broadband too. And so I, as a lawmaker who is kind of seen behind the curtain of, you know, how these funding fights for infrastructure can be, I know that, you know, there's sometimes a rural versus urban divide among politicians. It might not be Democrat versus Republican. It might be, you know, what kind of community you represent. As a member of Congress, should I get there, would be very focused on making sure that when we pass big infrastructure bills, they actually come back home to us and that we're getting them in the tiniest, those dollars for roads and for water quality in those tiniest towns and villages and not just the largest cities.
Now, you know, it seems one of the things that seem to be a constant battle in Washington is the Farm Bill. How do you feel about the Farm Bill?
Yeah, the Farm Bill is incredibly important. I think it's one of the most important votes that members of Congress take because for farmers, it is crucial for their economic security and for them getting their crops to market and harvesting, and for dairy farmers, of course, and their exports. And it's also important for food security. So there's been a coalition for decades of Democrats and Republicans who vote for the Farm Bill because it doesn't just support farmers, but it also feeds families and seniors. And that coalition broke this year. The Farm Bill's almost a full year late. The deadline was last September 30th. The Congress extended it to this September 30th, and it passed the House. And I criticized Eric Van Orden for two things. One, the SNAP benefits, the food share that helps people afford, you know, food to put on the table, didn't keep up with inflation over the next 5 years. So you'll get the same amount of money, but less food as a result. And that $28 billion was really important to a lot of people. But it wasn't just the cuts, it's that it broke the coalition. So Senate Democrats have already said we're not passing that version of the bill. And so what I'm worried about is the Farm Bill not getting done at all. And what does that mean? More uncertainty for farmers at a time, you know, input costs are difficult and they need to ensure that they have the security of, you know, not only pricing, but what if there will be a Farm Bill, what that looks like. And so in addition to that, he had there's a really important program called the Dairy Innovation Grant. And Derek Van Orden introduced an amendment after his own party had gutted the bill or the grant by 40%. On the Agriculture Committee, he introduced the amendment, but he didn't call for a vote. So it was kind of symbolic. He said, well, I would like this, but he has the majority in his caucus and he withdrew it, which means they never took a vote on it and he could have passed that. So I know, you know, I talked to him about this in person when I saw him in my assembly district, that I was disappointed on that because when it comes to getting things done, we need members of Congress who are going to usher, you know, the bill through every single step. It isn't just about getting it through the House. We need to make sure it goes through the Senate and on to the president. And as a lawmaker who's done that, who I've sat down with members of the Senate Republican caucus to negotiate on a PFAS bill as one example, that I don't view my job as just going and voting on a bill and then calling it a day or introducing an amendment but not getting a vote on it. I view it as ushering every part of the policy that I want done through the legislative process until it's signed into law, and then afterwards, as it's implemented, making sure my constituents get the benefits from that law. And so when it comes to the farm bill, A, we need it immediately, and B, it needs to be fair. It needs to support working families and seniors with food security. It also needs to center farmers and ensure that they have everything they need to be successful.
You know, we've covered several topics that are important for Southwest Wisconsin. We're an agricultural community. We're an elderly community in Richland Center, yet we are getting younger families in, so education is important. And the RNC just finished up, and we all saw how that went. But the DNC is coming up. What do you hope people get out of the DNC?
That's a great question. And as I've been traveling on the trail, I have to say I haven't thought that much about the DNC yet. But here's what I'll say. I hope that people see a contrast. I think in any election, there should be, you know, every candidate has to say, here's what I stand for and why me? You know, if you ask a voter for their vote, you have to be able to answer why you. And so I hope that that's articulated very clearly, and a vision for our future is important. My two issues that I've been talking about the most on the trail are democracy and freedom, because everything else follows. If you have a healthy democracy where your vote is counted and there's trust in that election and people aren't working to undermine that election or overturn it, that's important and key to civic participation and engagement. And then freedom, the freedom to make your own medical decisions, the freedom to breathe clean air and drink clean water. I think those are important too. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about contraception, IVF, you know, the ability to start a family when you want to, and abortion. And that's been really important to voters of all political ideologies, not just Democrats. And so I hope to see at the DNC Democrats really leading on democracy and freedom and showing that stark contrast. I've been hearing a lot from folks on the trail about Project 2025. It's a 900-page document. I'm still certainly going through it. But what I know is I'm concerned about the reshaping of our country and not only what the federal government would look like, but the lack of, you know, environmental protections, public education, workers' rights, access to health care. I'll mention, you know, surveillance for women seeking medical care is one that really disturbed me, but we've been talking about it because it shows that's their agenda and that's what we're seeing down the road. What I want Democrats to do at the DNC is show, here's our positive vision, here's our agenda, and it needs to center democracy and freedom.
Now, you brought up several things that you'd like to accomplish if you're elected, but if there's a Republican president, how do you see being able to work with that situation?
Sure. So I've done this before. I've always served in the minority and in the legislature, and I've served under a Republican governor and a Democratic governor. And I'm really proud to report that even when I didn't have the votes in the Assembly or the Senate in my own party or with the governor, who was a Republican when I was first elected, I still got bills passed, whether it was we actually made it easier for people with disabilities to get meaningful employment in Wisconsin. Wisconsin became a national leader, and I worked with Democrats and Republicans to make that happen. And the then Governor Walker signed it into law. So that's one example of a bill that I passed and led with former Senator Jennifer Schilling from the La Crosse area on when I was what's called a freshman. It's just like high school, right? So when you're first elected, they call you a freshman. If I were a freshman in Congress, here's what I'd do. I would work with anyone and everyone who is serious about getting things done for the issues that keep the people of Wisconsin up at night, whether it's lowering healthcare and prescription drug costs or ending demanding Citizens United to get big money out of politics. Whoever's serious about it, let's get it done. One of the things that I do as a Democrat who does work with both parties is I sit down with lawmakers and I say, hey, what interests you? What can we work on together? And I bring a menu of options of my goals and see if we can work together and negotiate. And, you know, I mentioned Project 2025. We're not going to negotiate on that. I oppose it. But if it comes to, you know, supporting farmers and passing a fair farm bill that works for them, let's do it. And if it comes to making healthcare more accessible and more affordable, let's do it. And protecting Social Security and Medicare, that's one of my priorities. And making public education fairly funded at all levels, including early childhood education and higher ed, absolutely. So that's really my stance is, if they're serious about working together, I'm on board because I want to deliver results. And that's the number one job of any elected official.
Well, I thank you, Katrina, for coming in today and taking the time to talk with us about these important issues that are facing Richland County and the surrounding area.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. And if people have more questions and would like to chat or ask me anything, you can go to KatrinaShankland for Congress.com.
All right. Well, you take care and safe travels.
Thank you.
Get ready for the Iowa County Ducks Unlimited event Friday, August 2nd, 2024. Join us at Dodger Bowl 318 King Street, Dodgeville. Doors open at 5:30. Enjoy delicious roast beef and pulled pork sandwiches, hors d'oeuvres, and free tab beer while supplies last. Win big with the Shotgun of the Year, a Browning Maxis 2 Ultimate, and the Handgun of the Year, Kimber 1911 KW Custom. Get more with Duck Bucks. Buy a $100 package and receive $120 worth of tickets. Register by July 29th for a chance to win a $120 Duck Buck card. Register at iowacountydu.org and don't miss out.
For years, you've relied on the Shoebox and Black Earth for selection, the right size, and that comfortable fit. Now you can save